Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
So, welcome back to the A to Z of Festivals with Rob DeBank, your genial host. And yeah, we're back this week, and it's me guesting on this week because traditionally, early September is kind of festival time. We're having a fallow year this year. Nicked that idea off Michael and Emily Eavis, so thank you, Michael and Emily. And yeah, festival's having a bit of a year off, and we'll see what comes back and when. But yeah, I was sort of definitely feeling a bit nostalgic at the weekend about festival and thinking back. And I don't tend to get nostalgic. I'm very much a forward-thinking young chap who only ever really focuses on the future. But yeah, I was sort of not in a sad way at all, but in a really positive, lovely way, just thinking about all the amazing acts that we had there and times too. So I'm going to do my 10 favourite acts from festivals past, present and future. Going to kick off with the Beastie Boys. So, I mean, I'm starting off randomly. I've just basically been through my brain and my memory and a little bit of Wikipedia too, just to refresh my memory, because I booked so many, amazing bands. And I don't mean that bigging myself up, but there were just so many incredible acts that have played festival. So I just wanted to kind of reflect on some of those. And yeah, in a very random, non-chronological order. So 2007, so we were 3 years into festival. I think it got up to about 30,000 people. And yeah, we had the Chemical Brothers, we had Primal Scream, we had Madness, the Levellers, the Orb, Gossip, with Beth Ditto, just when they were kind of really smashing it, like Standing in the Way of Control was like a massive hit. We had the Maccabees, who were like literally, you know, the indie band of the moment. A young chap called Calvin Harris from Scotland, I remember watching him in the Big Top, cranking out tracks like Acceptable in the 80s. If you're sort of maybe 25 and under, then you'll know a different Calvin Harris than I know, because Calvin Harris used to be a lot different. And yeah, he's still making great pop records, great records, full stop. But yeah, this was sort of just when he was kind of honing his craft. But the act that I'm sort of choosing from that year is the Beastie Boys. So I had been chasing them for 3 years. It was one of those acts that I really, really wanted to get. You know, I grew up listening to the Beasties, Fight For Your Right and No Sleep Till Brooklyn, and, you know, nicking VW badges off the VW garage that was around the corner in our village and putting them around our neck on stupid chains and wearing daft, ill-fitting tracksuits and kind of pretending we were the we were the Beastie Boys when we were 15 or 16. So yeah, to have them agree to do our show was just absolutely beyond our wildest dreams. And then they also agreed not only to do the show, but they wanted to do two shows. So they did a greatest hits show. So imagine that, Beastie Boys greatest hits for 90 minutes, for 2 hours, whatever it was. And then on the next day, I think it was in this order, on the Sunday, they did an instrumental show, which they said was instrumental, but actually turned out to be pretty much you know, the greatest hits again, or a load of new different greatest hits that they hadn't done the night before. And yeah, with DJ Money Mark, and yeah, it was just absolutely bonkers. And the Beasties, you know, the nice thing, they did an incredible show, two incredible shows, but the best thing was that when they turned up on site, we gave them some hand-knitted Bestival cardigans that we used to make every year. So they put those on straight away. You know, they didn't stick them in the van or something. They nicked our golf buggy off us and went driving around the site, you know, high-fiving everyone. And yeah, just generally really getting stuck into the show, you know, they totally embraced it, spent the whole weekend there. Their rider was kind of local chutneys, local jams, and, you know, hummus or something like that. It was really healthy, really nice, and that, you know, they wanted stuff from the locality, from the Isle of Wight. So it was, yeah, it was great that they just sort of embraced the whole Isle of Wight experience, loved coming over on the ferry. So there you go, Beastie Boys playing to 30,000 people, 2007.
This is Rob DeBank's A to Z of Festivals. Subscribe now and please remember to rate.
So, in at number two, in no particular order, from my 10 favourite acts from Bestival, and this is pretty selfish because it's just me, but I did book kind of 99% of the acts for Bestival. So, you know, yeah, I'm going to do it, god damn it. I don't care what anyone else says. No, I do, and I hope you're... Hopefully, you know, if you did come to Bestival, or you're thinking of coming to Bestival in the future, then maybe you'll be like, oh, well, that wouldn't be who I'd have chosen. So, yeah, so 2004, our first Bestival. Me and Josie, our friends John and Ziggy, you know, we came up with this crazy concept of doing our own festival. There weren't many festivals around at the time. You know, there really weren't. You know, there were probably like 10 or 20 festivals as opposed to like 700 or 800. So it seemed like not totally insane to kind of go into that market. We had no long-term plan beyond kind of getting year one out of the way. We thought it was maybe even going to be like a 24-hour kind of just a rave, you know, for 24 hours and you know, with a sort of bit of a festival feeling to it. And then it sort of quickly morphed into, you know, the fact we were going to do it for 3 days. We found this great site on the Isle of Wight, Robin Hill. And, you know, I was DJing on Radio 1 at the time. I was very, you know, sort of very involved in that whole network of acts and DJs and managers and agents that I sort of still am. And I sort of just managed to pull in some favours, and some very nice agents lent us some lovely acts for the weekend, with a sort of financial transaction that took place as well, obviously. So yeah, the first year we had Fatboy Slim was there, Milo, who was like, you know, the hottest guy out there, Lee Scratch Perry, the veteran Jamaican dub producer, 07, the Bees, who were from the Isle of Wight and were absolutely smashing it, you know, with this great new alternative kind of indie folk funk happy band from the Isle of Wight, the Bees. So that, you know, they were there as well. But the act I remember really kind of taking the roof off, because they were mates of mine. I lived in London with them. Didn't live in London with them, sorry, but I lived in London and they lived in London, and we used to do clubs together and stuff, was Basement Jack. So in 2004, Basement Jack, Saturday night headliner, I think they were Saturday night, could have been Sunday. And I just remember walking onto the stage during Basement Jack's show and just thinking, I've made it, you know. If I die now, I don't need to achieve anything else in my life. And it was, you know, it was probably 4,000 people there, maybe 5,000 with all the artists and stuff, but it just seemed like, you know, 50,000 to me, and it just looked incredible. And it was, you know, one of the proudest moments of our of our sort of lives, all of us just looking out and thinking, wow, what have we created? And, you know, we didn't realise that festival was going to become such a big festival and have such sort of impact. So it was, you know, it was early days and people were in their fancy dress because it was, you know, the first year we'd obviously done that and people had really embraced that. We thought 10 people might turn up in fancy dress, you know, 90% of people all got dressed up, and that kind of kicked off the whole dressing up at festivals, theming at festivals, and it was just it was a glorious experience. So yeah, shout out to Felix and Simon from Basement Jacks, who still come to our festivals now, and we love them. Number three in my 10 favourite acts from festival with me, Rob DeBank, on the A to Z of festivals is Amy Winehouse. So this is a bit of a bittersweet one. I have to say, you know, after watching the Amy Winehouse documentary, you know, she played in 2008, which was kind of when she was having a rough time, I think it's fair to say, you know, a very rough time, and she was not at her finest, you know. I did think twice about including Amy, but I, you know, I think it's important because it was, you know, it was a massive deal for us to have her at festival. You know, she was being talked about a lot in all manner of ways, and you know, we loved Amy and we still do. You know, her music is part of the festival and Camp Festival kind of, you know, palette. It's what we, you know, we play that. I still play that in a lot of my DJ sets. And you know, she was late for the show. I was DJing before. I was, you know, it's 2008, so I'm sure CDJs had been invented, or, you know, people played off CDs then, but, you know, it's way before any mad DJ technology. So I was actually playing off vinyl decks. I was playing in the front of house tower. It was raining. I think it was a pretty muddy weekend, 2008, and think again, it was Saturday night. You have to forgive me, and please don't all sit there staring at your device and saying, "What? How can you not even remember?" I've got a terrible memory, and I haven't fact checked all this stuff. So, yeah, it might be our festival, but I haven't fact checked it all. So, forgive me if I'm wrong. But I do. I mean, I remember My Bloody Valentine played on the Friday night, and I remember trudging through the rain and mud to go and see how they were doing, because I love My Bloody Valentine, and they'd kind of insisted that they had no decibel limit and that they'd be going up to 120 dB, which is really, really quite loud for a festival crowd. And I just remember this absolute wall of amazing shoegaze noise just sort of barreling down the valley in Robin Hill. And I saw about half a song because I was having to shove you know, straw barrels under toilets to stop them falling over in the mud and stuff like that. So it was like not my finest booking in terms of actually being able to see any of them, but I did manage to catch about half a song, and then trudged back to my mud duties. But yeah, Amy, I think was the next night, and she was late. She did look a bit bedraggled and not quite with it. My mate Keith had to come to go with the driver to go and pick her up from her hotel. She was really late getting in the car. There's other stuff that I probably won't even talk about because I just think there's some element of privacy involved here, but nothing sinister. But I, you know, it was Amy came, she played, and people, I think, kind of enjoyed it. But it was, you know, it was an odd time and an odd sort of experience, but you know, it's really stuck with me, and I blooming love Amy Winehouse. Also that year it was Underworld, Aphex Twin played, Will Young, Sam Sparrow, The Breeders, George Clinton, Gary Newman. I think we had two surprise acts, Grace Jones and The Specials, which is pretty flipping awesome, isn't it, to have those two as special guests. Grace was sort of walking up and down her big kind of steps on the stage. She had these big steps made. She had this huge fan blowing this mad gown over her head. She just looked absolutely incredible, and it didn't matter that it was It was raining. The Specials hadn't played live for a long time, I don't think. And I think maybe they'd reformed. And this was their sort of comeback show. And no one knew who was coming on stage. And I love that. I mean, we did Bombay Bicycle Club at Camp Bestall this year. And it's just so nice to have something that just people coming on stage and they don't quite know, you know, what it's going to be. And yeah, the Specials and Grace Jones, that was awesome. And Dan Sack versus Scroobius Pip, who were part of the family as well. So, yeah, 2008, there you go. Right, 2015, let's fast forward 7 years. A lot has happened in this time, people. And yeah, I mean, we're up to, I don't know, 45, 50,000 people here, maybe. It's the Summer of Love is the theme. I think it was a sunny year. I think it was. I don't remember any mud at this one. But yeah, Missy Elliott, 2015. I mean, Missy Elliott, well, you know, what else do you want me to say? It was like, how the hell did we manage to bag Missy Elliott? I mean, I've tried more recently for other shows, and I know how much she is now. And I think it was a golden time because we got her, you know, I know that was only 3 or 4 years ago, but yeah, she, you know, she was not the most ridiculously expensive act. She was absolutely charming. As anything, we met her afterwards. We, you know, me and Josie don't hang around the backstage going, oh yeah, let's meet all the headliners. But on this occasion, you know, the guys were like, look, you've got to go and meet Missy Elliott. You've just booked her. She's just absolutely smashed it. And she was so good, you know, such a tight show. Some hip hop shows, you know, can be a bit messy, can be a bit sort of stop-start, a bit shouty. You know, the sound isn't always great. You've got a DJ doing mad rewinds and stuff, and it all gets a bit sort of chopped up. And I'll be coming on to one of those acts in a minute. But yeah, this was very much not like that. It was so slick, incredible dancing. I just posted a little thing on my socials that was showing me coming up on the platform. So she had like a little hidden platform. She came out from under the stage on this platform and popped up. So yeah, absolutely amazing. Definitely one of my top 10 ever acts. And yeah, Missy Elliott, we love you. Also that year, Duran Duran, who were just flying, Chemical Brothers, Underworld, Tame Impala, they were awesome. The Jacksons, who were just, yeah, brilliant, and had a great, you know, great tribute in there. Jungle, I remember watching Jungle and Jurassic 5. I think they were playing one after the other on the main stage, and yeah, Jungle had just kind of come out either that year or the year before, and were, you know, just all their hits, busy earning and stuff. So yeah, great show from them. Jurassic 5, hip-hop royalty again, you know, they know how to put on a live hip-hop show, no messing around. Rudimental, they were definitely, you know, on a high, and they were, you know, having acts like Rudimental, Flying Lotus was there, Skrillex, who just tore HMS Bestival apart, totally amazing. And the Chuckle Brothers, of course, not forgetting the Chuckles. So from Missy to the Chuckle Brothers, that was 2015. Cracking on, it's, yes, a number five, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Another hip-hop act. So this was the year before, actually. The theme was Desert Island Disco, which we obviously wanted it to be nice and hot and sunny. I think it was, but again, I just couldn't tell you. Outkast, I mean, you know, flipping heck, Outkast. They were just off the scale. They were so hyped up. They were just running around the stage, getting everyone going. The sound was incredible. The light show, the band, it was all just so tight, and they just kept, you know, I mean, I'm not an Outkast completist, but it was like you knew every track, or you seemed to know every track. Everyone was just singing along in the crowd. It was the kind of before people really started filming stuff on their phones. It was just like everyone was just this mad party atmosphere and just totally amazing. So Outkast, yeah, my number five. Not forgetting Foles. This is part of the same one, sorry. Foles, who were the Saturday night headliner that year. It was, you know, people always said, oh, you know, festival promoters need to be braver. They need to book up-and-coming bands. Foles had been around for a few years, but they were sort of probably maybe not, you know, they wouldn't have been big enough to headline Reading or something like that. But, you know, at best of all, it was like, yeah, let's take a chance and, you know, see what they can do. And they totally killed it, you know, absolutely amazing headliner. Sheik did the Sunday. We did the world's biggest disco ball with Nile Rodgers. He kind of, well, we pretended actually that he challenged us to make the world's biggest disco ball. We actually had, we were already making it, and we just thought it was a nice little tie-in. So at the end of his set, then he had to come back off the main stage, and it was being filmed and beamed onto the big screens by the side of the stage. It was like, I don't know, 40,000 people watching Sheik, and then he was me and Niall had to talk to the guy in a suit from Guinness Book of Records, who stood there at his clipboard and his bow tie, saying, wow, you know, the previous record was 9.98 metres, and I can officially confirm that you have beaten it with 10.33 metres. And we had the Mirabal hanging off a crane, spinning in the air with people kind of on guide ropes, spinning it, and it just looked so cool. And I was stood there with my arm around Nile Rodgers, just like, this can't be beaten. Also that year, London Grammar, Sam Smith was... you know, he was just coming through. It was probably one of the first times that he played all his big kind of hits at that time. Candy Staton, Wild Beast, Clean Bandit, LaRue, Bonobo, and the Mosh Pit prize went to Skindred, who played on the main stage on Saturday. And yeah, great, great band. So there you go. That was number five. Let's go to number six.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
This is Rob De Banks A to Z of Festivals. Subscribe now and please remember to rate.
So, numero sixo, as they say, nowhere. One, two, hold on, sorry, let me just count this up. I don't want to get this wrong. One, two, three, four, five, six. Okay, so let's go back in time to our 4, 5, 6. So this was the third year, and you know, Bestel started with 4,000 or 5,000 people. Then it kind of sprung up to like, I don't know, I want to say like 8 or 10, and then it went to like 12 or possibly 14. So it had, you know, it suddenly was like almost doubling, but you know, 50% more people coming each year. And you know, it was a great wave to be on. You know, it was just like, my God, look how many tickets we've sold. So I think probably at this one there were between 13,000 to 15,000 people. You know, which maybe, you know, I know there's a lot of festivals that are bigger than that, but it just felt huge to us. So another lovely year for music. We had Devendra Banhart, one of my favourite ever artists of the 20th century. Lily Allen, who, you know, was just still like a very young pop star. I remember she came over and our son Arlo had just been born, and she gave Arlo a kiss, and I keep still wind him up. Now he's a moody 13-year-old that he was got kissed by Lily Allen once. Amadou and Mariam, the blind duo from Bamako, just incredible African musicians. You know, just so many great moments. Pet Shop Boys, Goggle Bordello, who, yeah, just completely amazing. And this is not one of my favourite ever bands, by the way, just so you're aware, but Scissor Sisters headlined. They were sort of right at the peak of their sort of pop stardom. You know, they were literally everywhere. You know, Scissor Sisters is just a household name. Again, if you're younger and you don't know them, you know, just have a little Google. They just made very infectious, slightly gay, kind of beautiful pop music that was just, you know, really, really inclusive and just fun. And so the reason they're one of my favourite ever headliners are because, well, not only did Jake get married in the inflatable church to his partner, which was a sight, and just, I think we had it on a local TV show, and it was just brilliant, him walking down the aisle of the inflatable church. I mean, you know, just imagine an inflatable church in a field of Jake Shears from the Scissor Sisters walking down the aisle and all these people off their nuts, throwing confetti and rice all over them. Yeah, but the theme was, well, what we first did was is we came up with the theme of the circus, and so many people got in touch with us and said they suffered from coulrophobia, which is the fear of clowns, which is, I found out at that point, the kind of third biggest phobia after arachnophobia and something else phobia. But it's, yeah, a lot of people are really scared of clowns. I don't get it myself. I love clowns, really grotesque, scary clowns with big red noses, scary eyes. But yeah, so the Scissor Sisters sort of saw that I think we changed the theme then slightly because we got so much sort of backlash, so we changed it slightly. But the Scissor Sisters, I didn't even know this was happening, but they'd seen all this happening, and it was kind of in the press and people were talking about it. And so when they finally came on stage, it's either Saturday or Sunday night, they came on with like four or five giant, like 12-foot high clown puppets with huge heads, like 3-foot round heads, and all really amazingly made, these people on stilts. I might be over imagining it, but I mean, that did happen, but it might not have been quite as big as that. But it, you know, so it's just like a total kind of jokey kind of up yours to everyone that was scared of clowns, and it just got such a great reaction. And then they just went on and totally slayed it with, you know, really infectious, upbeat kind of show, animatronic, and Jake Shears just kind of leading everyone in this beautiful kind of beautiful headline moment. So yeah, that was the Scissor Sisters 2006. Right, Elton John 2013, we can't do this and not include Elton. I mean, we had a good lineup that year. We had Fatboy Slim, we had Snoop Dogg, we had MIA, we had Franz Ferdinand, we had The Knife, Wu-Tang Clan. And when I was talking about kind of chaotic hip-hop shows, then Wu-Tang wrote the book on chaotic hip-hop shows. Even to get them on the plane was a flipping nightmare, and not all of them made it. More of them made it than I thought were going to make it. I think we had about five members maybe, but I don't even want to start naming them because I know at least one of them was dead and one of them didn't make the flight. They actually were quite good in the end. They were pretty good. And it was just, you know, Wu-Tang is so legendary that even to have a 3/4 of the Wu-Tang was a good clan party. Bombay Bicycle Club, Bastille, The Roots, Disclosure, who were just kind of really coming into their own, Richie Horton, Carl Cox, and While She Sleeps. So there you go, just to show the breadth of that one. But Elton, yeah, I remember Saturday afternoon, you know, I'd been chasing him again, you know, for quite a few years, trying to you know, lure him in, going through his lovely agent, big up to yourselves, to you guys, thank you for booking him. And yeah, it happened, and it wasn't some, you know, ridiculous sum that was going to bankrupt us. It wasn't like a rider request that was just beyond a joke. I remember he wanted obviously his own compound, so he had this huge, did have this big compound with wardrobes kind of coming out of your ears. You know, there was just outfits everywhere. And again, I wasn't hanging around trying to meet him, but this sleek black helicopter flew over the site at about, you know, 3 o'clock on the Saturday afternoon and started circling. And I was walking through the site with Josie, and I just pointed up. I said, "That is Elton." I didn't even know he was coming by helicopter, I don't think. And you could just tell, and the crowd started all looking up at the sky and just sort of thinking, yeah, that was Elton. So yeah, he arrived in style. I was sort of doing something backstage. I think I was dealing with a Tom Adele issue or something, and me and Tom Adele were backstage, and I just someone came up and said, oh, Elton wants to meet you. So it's like, Elton John wants to meet you, you know. And in the moment, you're just too sort of wrapped up and too kind of busy to even think twice about that. So okay, let's do that. Come on, let's get that out of the way. Tick that box. So I went in, just me and him, sat in his porter cabin. He was in a black Adidas tracksuit, super chilled, lovely, inviting, just really warm-hearted, you know, had a cup of tea with him all the time in the world, just no sort of superstar kind of ego at all. And then he had a nice chat with Tom Adele, said what a huge fan he was of him, and then, you know, and then we kind of went on our merry way. And now I saw him obviously later on the stage, and it was just such a beautiful show. He'd made his own jacket. I think it said, you know, it said something on the back like festival, or it was the theme. It was like a really beautiful glitzy jacket. He sat there at the piano, just, you know, knocking out hit after hit, slow, fast, everything in between. And it was just absolutely incredible moment. Elton John. And then I think maybe people who follow me on social media have seen this, but I've written a few, posted this once actually, just that he, you know, about a week after Bestival, in fact before the week was even up, I got a handwritten letter to my home and couldn't really read the writing. It was absolutely beautiful, kind of calligraphic or calligraphy sort of writing, and it said, "Dear Rob," and it blah blah blah, I thought it was from some guy that I'd booked on the bandstand or something, you know, who I'd given a second chance, because it was such a grateful letter, and the tone was kind of like, thank you so much, it was the most incredible experience for us and the band, one of my favourite ever shows ever, you know, well done to you and Josie for everything you've achieved, blah, blah, blah. And I thought, oh, I don't know who this is from, and then I realised it said Elton at the bottom. And so it was just, yeah, to have an artist write a handwritten letter, I don't think that's ever happened to me before, and no one ever says thank you to me, so it was a lovely, lovely moment. And big up yourself, Elton. Come back one day. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That is number 7. We need to crack on the bank. From Elton John in 2013, let's go back in time to Royksopp in 2005. So this was the second year of Bestival, and we just sort of, like I said earlier, we'd sort of sprung up from 4,000 or 5,000 to maybe almost doubling that. And we had the Magic Numbers there, who were sort of riding high in the charts, who just beautiful sunshine, pop, indie. Too Many DJs brought there, Too Many DJs and Soul Wax shows, so they played live and then they DJed, and they were like the hottest DJs in the world, you know, just cutting up all their bootlegs mash-ups. It was just that sort of Errol Olkin type style of just, you know, it was such an exciting time for DJs, and Too Many DJs just owned it. Super Furry Animals. It was, you know, our second year in, we kind of still didn't entirely know what we were doing, but we knew a lot more than we had done the first year, that running the security ourselves, we were stopping people rolling, burning toilet rolls into the woods. We were carrying bags of sort of cash around, trying to restock the bar floats. We were, Josie and her mate T were kind of driving around with these large bags of cash, trying to replenish everywhere. They were going back the other way with like pre-made margarita mix from their bar in London, where they kind of made enough margarita for probably about 30 people, and there were like 5,000 people in a queue waiting for a margarita. So it was just bedlam. But the second year in, definitely we were in a better place. Royksopp, I was a music journalist at the time as well as being a DJ, and I'd spent a lot of time DJing in Norway and writing pieces on the Norway scene, all the amazing people coming out of Norway. So Royksopp were the biggest one of those. They were on Wall of Sound. They were like the alternative band and act to love at the time, and they, you know, they were just so good, playing hits like Eplay and stuff. It was, you know, not the biggest band in the world, and not the, you know, but they made such a huge difference to the electronic scene at the time, and yeah, still one of my favourite festival headliners.
This is Rob De Banks' A to Z of Festivals. Subscribe now and please remember to rate.
Okay, so let's do the final two. And as I said, you know, at the beginning, this isn't in any order, so it's not like we're ending with the best or these are the worst at all. I mean, God, Prodigy 2010, how can that be the worst? I mean, God, those guys, you know, R.I.P. Keith Flint, what a legend, what an absolute legend. No, he didn't write the songs, and yeah, he, you know, he had turmoil, but you know, when he came out on that stage, he just completely smashed it. Such energy, you know, they were all really hyped to be there. We tried for a few years to get them there, and it was just, you know, 50,000 people. It was a big year for us. It was like, you know, I would have booked the Prodigy every year if I could have done, because they're just, you know, one of the festival bands of all time. You know, there's just very few acts that, you know, live in that festival zone. You know, there's some acts that just fall a bit flat in a festival, but you know, they were built for festivals. So yeah, huge props to the Prodge. Big year, you know, on other stages and all around, actually. I mean, Flaming Lips, you know, Wayne Coyne, he got in his ball, a giant hamster ball. If you've never seen the Flaming Lips or seen Wayne Coyne do this, maybe Google it. But you know, he was basically rolling around the field, probably over about 30,000 people in this sort of hamster ball, just in his suit, you know, just with his mad hair and just, you know, being completely psychedelic. And a lot of our crew got dressed up in the costumes that you can go on the stage with them. Again, Google it, young people, because it will make more sense. Dizzy played that year, Dizzy Rascal. Gil Scott Heron, sadly, RIP Gil, who passed away not long after, but he was incredible. Roxy Music, God, yeah, I mean, you know, I love Roxy Music so much. And Brian Ferry just brought this whole level of pizzazz and sort of sophistication that we probably have never had since at Bestival, and it was just incredible. Mark Almond from Soft Cell, just an incredible performer. The XX played that year. Don't think they were headlining. I think, was that the year? No, I can't remember. I'm thinking they were playing before Florence on the main stage, but that might have been a different year. Anyway, they were obviously just supreme. Howard Jones, 80s God, Chasing Status, you know, the list goes on. But yeah, it was the Prodigy's year. They owned it, 2010. Okay, and last but not least, Mr. Stevie Wonder. You know, I mean, through all the best tools that I've done and hopefully will do, then it's, you know, Stevie. How can you... You can't get any higher than that, can you? I mean, that is like godlike status. Him and Elton, you know, Bosh, job done. 2012, big year again. Florence and the Machine, New Order, Sigur Rós, the XX. Oh, there you go. So the XX, this is the year that the XX were on before Florence, and nearly, I have to say, sort of blew her off the stage, but they didn't. Florence was incredible that year as well, but the XX was so good that it was very hard to beat them. Two Door Cinema Club, Warpaint, De La Soul, Adamant, who was just fantastic. First Aid Kit, Gallows, incredible Circle Pit for Gallows. That's what I liked, putting on a really good thrash band on Saturday afternoons to get a good old Circle Pit going. MF Doom with his metal mask. If you're a fan of underground hip-hop, you'll know MF Doom. Major Lazer there with Diplo. They played quite a few times and always owned it. I remember when Diplo told everyone to take their shirts off that year and wave them above their heads and run from one side of the field to the other. It was just one of the best moments, but not as good as Stevie Wonder, who I mean, a little bit of planning to get that one done, but again, you know, no massive egos, just lovely crew to deal with, you know, great manager, and you know, just, you know, chilled out, very professional crew. Stevie brought his daughter out, I think it was, as a sort of special guest singer. But they had us really... one thing I do remember is that they were in London during the day. They woke up in London and they phoned up in the morning. They were like, OK, we're going to come down for sound check, and then we're going to go back to London, and then we're going to come back in the evening. And it's like, hold on, guys, like, even me now, after 10 years of living on the Isle of Wight, it takes me a minimum of 3 hours door to door to get from my house to London. So that's a kind of 6 hour round trip if I went up and back in the same without even doing a sound check. So, you know, Stevie Wonder's team were like, yeah, we're going to do it twice in a day and still be back for 9 p.m. or whenever they had to get on stage. So this kind of got us totally freaked out, and I can't remember what happened in the end, but I think maybe we talked them out of it and they just came down. They arrived by car. I remember people were posting photos of sitting next to Stevie Wonder on the ferry. You know, he was like absolutely loving it, just coming over to the Isle of Wight. You know, what an adventure. And yeah, you know, he just went through his whole songbook and, you know, decades of incredible soul and disco and funk and healing music for everyone. And it was just, yeah, a lovely moment. So that's Stevie Wonder 2012. And yeah, that kind of wraps up my 10 favourite acts. Not all headliners actually, but just, yeah, 10 favourite acts from Bestival over the years. And let's see who we can drum up next. But yeah, thank you for listening to the podcast. Back next week. We're going to try and keep this one going through the autumn and winter, but we'll see how we get on. I think there's so many festival acts, so many festival sort of icons to talk to, so we'll keep going until we run out of them. But yeah, thank you very much for listening, and yeah, tell your mates to subscribe to it, and see you next week.
This is Rob De Banks A to Z of Festivals. Subscribe now, and please remember to rate.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.